From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The narrator of Michael Thomas's debut novel, Man Gone Down, tells us, "It's a strange thing to go through life as a social experiment." He's a black man who grew up in Boston during the era of school busing, and he's now trying to claim his place in the and a piece of the American dream. The book is published by Black Cat, an imprint of Grove Atlantic, and it brings Michael Thomas to my show today. Hello.
Hello.
Like your unnamed protagonist, you grew up in Boston and now live in Brooklyn. And it's written in the first person, reads like a memoir. So do you find people assume that it's autobiographical?
Yeah, quite often people actually announce autobiographical sections. Consider that my wife is the narrator's wife, Claire, and that they refer to the narrator as you.
Mm-hmm.
So
does that bother you? I'm sure that some of it is based on your life and some of it is invented.
Much of it's invented. I wouldn't say it bothers me. It causes for awkward moments at times because I don't want to correct somebody to say, you're wrong.
That's not me. That's my character.
That's my character. And then, of course, the obligatory eyeball roll and the wink. Sure it is. But that does happen quite a bit.
Well, you have stacked the deck a bit. Your narrator is a writer who, now I don't know whether you've been struggling to figure out how to pay the bills and keep the family together, but if you're a writer, you've been through that. And it's a situation pretty much all writers have to deal with at the starts of their careers.
Yeah. He is a writer. He's a failed writer.
Here we are,
the divergence, yeah. I would say there are certain events that are semi-autobiographical. What is closer to autobiography is perhaps the I've always been curious about how the mind works. So the narrative lens is perhaps autobiographical.
But getting into this guy's head is something that's fun to do as a writer.
It's very fun, and as I said, I've always been curious as to how others perceive, or people perceive, or what people do perceive, and I wanted to create a character whose mind you do get into and see where he goes with his logic or his emotion.
Yeah. Why not give him a name? Because it's harder for me as an interviewer. I say we meet him on his 35th birthday. He's broke, living in a friend's house. His wife and kids have gone to stay with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And he's working as a day laborer. But the men he works with all call him professor. So I guess we should call him professor.
Yeah, I think he refers to himself as Ishmael, jokingly at one point. But he's dad, or he's hun from his wife. Or hey is a name he uses. Why not give him a name? I don't have a satisfactory answer for that. I suppose I could say I couldn't think of one, or a good one. I think names are very important in fiction. And he is nameless, and he is somewhat anonymous walking through the streets of Brooklyn.
Because so much of this is interior monologue, and we don't give ourselves names when we are thinking that way.
No. I don't call myself Michael in my head quite often. It's something I can't repeat on the radio, usually.
Oh, the name you have for yourself. He's come back to construction after years of teaching. Now, why construction? I mean, why wouldn't he have maintained a career in teaching?
Well, a career in teaching, as I'm a teacher, I'm an adjunct in the CUNY system, is it's a strange construction, a career in teaching. Construction pays better, simply.
That's a good reason.
And teaching is a strange career, and it's not something you can just jump into spontaneously
but
on a whim.
Yeah. But construction doesn't fit in with his concept of himself. He keeps on saying, I was supposed to have been somebody. And this grows out of the fact that as a child, he was bused to a school in the suburbs where his classmates were rich and white as part of an integration program, I'm assuming. And he was supposed to be a big success as a result of that, and obviously feels that pressure.
Feels the pressure, yeah. And I think is perhaps recognized that there's a time in one's life when one has potential, and there's a time when that potential has passed.
But also I wonder about something like that as being a two-edged sword. Obviously, the opportunities are available to somebody like your character here that they wouldn't have been otherwise. And so he has achieved in a way he might not have otherwise. On the other hand, there's a negative side to it.
Well, yeah, he has many opportunities, and he squanders many opportunities in his life. He's been afforded a certain privilege that many of his peers certainly weren't.
Because everybody says he has potential.
Because of potential, yeah. The great potential of a certain generation and, you know, what becomes of potential, you know, the actuality and the potentiality of something. And maybe that potential or the, recognizing that potential is just a projection of someone else's. And how do you live up to someone else's idea of your potential?
My guest is Michael Thomas, whose novel Man Gone Down is now available from Black Cat, which is an original imprint of Grove Atlantic. His high school friends have all wound up in worse shape than he has. They're homeless, psychotic, in and out of detox. But they went through the busing experiment as well.
Yeah, they did. It's they're a slice of perhaps the first generation of integration in the United States. Whereas his mother, and certainly my mother, is from the Jim Crow South, and it was a strange experiment to all of a sudden be with white students in the suburbs. And there were certainly racial lines drawn, but because of that, class lines were overlooked, or ethnic lines, or cultural lines. And so the narrator finds himself with these other boys who have their own trauma or diasporas to consider, and they find each other. But their potential for quote-unquote American success is perhaps as grand as his, but their potential for danger is perhaps as great. Different kinds of dangers. But
also, there's the whole matter of what we really are. I mean, your narrator describes his racial makeup as Black, Irish, Indian, but he's just automatically going to be categorized as Black.
Yeah. He's phenotypically, he is, well, brown, which means Black, which means a great many things, I suppose. And he does say that quite often, tongue-in-cheek, that he is a Black Irish Indian, but he also says it seriously because that's allegedly what he is. That is his lineage, culturally and biologically, if that's even possible.
Now, there's also been a lot of alcohol in the family, and his father's abandoned him. So how much can education actually change people? How much can educational opportunity change people and lift them above all of the dysfunctional aspects of their lives?
Well, I think one of the things I explored was education as that great leveler and knowledge, the accumulation or the acquisition of knowledge and what it perhaps can do. And, you know, armed with a book, you know, amidst a sea of troubles, what would one do? And perhaps it is a liberator, or perhaps it is redemptive, or perhaps it isn't. Perhaps it is a kind of burden that makes the narrator somewhat inactive and contemplative as the kind of combinatorics of situations multiply in a almost viral-like way.
He and his wife, who's white, are now sending their kids to private schools. Wouldn't that be a good reason for all of their financial problems? And might readers be forgiven for wondering, why not send them to public schools?
The debate of public versus private.
Well, he's living in some place that sounds like Cobble Hill or Carroll Gardens, and the schools are pretty good around there.
Sure, yeah. And people have asked me about that, getting back to the autobiographical content of the book. You know, why not?
I'm way past the autobiographical.
Oh, yeah, okay. You know, why not public? Why, you know, why private versus public? But if you consider the narrator's lineage, that he was in private school, and he was switched to public school, which he seems to have a great amount of trouble with, I think, if we look at our New York City public school, which, you know, Cobble Hill and Borum Hill certainly do have good public schools, but I think if we consider the quality of education, isn't necessarily how much money you spend, but just class size, yeah?
On the other hand, more likely in some cases to face discrimination in a private school if you're different than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be one of the things. So do you see your character as conflicted, critical of the desire for upward mobility, but at the same time buying very much into it?
He's buying into some parts of it, certainly. Just getting back to the private school, yeah, different phenotypically perhaps, but perhaps akin in other ways. And why is that dividing line race or class? There are, you know, certainly different compartments one fits in.
Well, complicating the whole matter is that we mentioned mixed race earlier. Well, when he looks at his kids, he finds himself thinking that his younger son, who's light-skinned and green-eyed, would be able to pass, but his older son, who's darker, wouldn't. And I always thought passing was something that stopped happening in the 20th century. At some point, people just self-identified, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, the end of that. Well, I think throughout the 20th century, there have been different kinds of passing. If you, from Nella Larsen's novella Passing, and Quicksand, it's about literally passing from one world to the other. And James Weldon Johnson's autobiography of an ex-colored man is about switching back and forth. I think the question that people don't ask is, which way are you passing? Quite often when people read Johnson's novel, which they confuse as being a memoir, he passes for white rather than ask, you know, well, is he passing for black? And so that further complicates it. And then, of course, with his children, to pass is, you know, do you pass in terms of politically? Do you pass culturally? You know, how do you fit or go beneath the radar?
Well, I spoke to another novelist a couple of years ago who's one of the themes was, what are you? Everybody asks the character, what are you? Because, well, she looks white, but there's something different, and it seems to matter so much. And that's one of the things that concerned her in writing the book, that it seemed to matter to people so much to be able to categorize her.
Yeah, I think that's important to distinguish here. The narrator's younger son, who looks white, won't have that asked of him. What are you? And therefore can get along or go along with his life and explore different things without being under the scrutiny of race. You will behave this way, good or for the bad or for the good. Whereas his older one will have that question asked, what are you?
Your novel has been compared to Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. I'm sure you were complimented. Was he an influence?
He was a great influence, yeah.
And it's published by Black Cat, the imprint of Grove Atlantic, which in its early days published William Burroughs' Naked Lunch, Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer, Hubert Selby's Last Exit to Brooklyn, also Frantz Fanon, Jack Kerouac, Jean Genet. So you're in pretty good company here.
Well, by association, I'm not sure if I merit the comparison, but yeah, Ellison was... has been and continues to be a great influence, as well as some of the other Grove writers, yeah.
Are you writing another novel?
I am, yes.
Okay, I won't ask you what it's about. Will the narrator have a name?
The narrator will have a name. He does have a name. His name is Virgil.
I've been talking with Michael Thomas. His novel, Man Gone Down, is published by Black Cat. And I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.